Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. Now, if you've been listening to American Variety over the past, 6 years or so, you've heard that we've had a number of novelists on the show as guests at different points. But we've never had a poet, and that may be an indication that there aren't that many poets out on the landscape anymore. But we do have one today as my guest. Her name is Joanna O'Keefe, and she's a very well-known poet in Central Florida. Welcome, Joanna.
Thank you.
Joanna's a graduate of Syracuse University, and I notice in your bio you've also spent some time at monasteries, Benedictine monasteries, two different ones, and the Center for Action and Contemplation in New Mexico. And I have to admit, I did wonder whether there's a contradiction between action and contemplation. I guess they were trying to work both sides of the fence in their marketing.
Well, not really, because you have to be more questor monastic. I know with my own personality, if I just stay monastic, you get out of balance. So contemplation and action, Richard Rohr was the founder of this center, and he's a Franciscan priest, and he really does speaking engagements all over the world. And it's just a good balance, contemplation and action.
Well, spending time in a monastery is probably something that a lot of people have thought about doing, but most people don't do, partly because life sweeps you away, and it takes a real commitment of time to do that. But it also takes a commitment of time to write poetry, and a lot of people do, you know, write down a jingle or a doggerel or some poetry to their dog or their daughter or something. But you've had books of poetry published. Why don't you tell us the title of a couple of your books?
Well, the first book I had published was Come to the Garden, An Invitation to Serenity. And the second is The Path Less Taken, Words of Encouragement. And then in 2006, Morning's Light, Poems from My Journal. And just this month, Embraced, a book of love poems.
Okay, so Morning's Light, and then Embraced. And I've got those out here. Those are bigger books with lots and lots of poems in them. Embraced came out in 2010, and it's a book, as you say, of love poems. But I think so far, the best-known poem of Joanna's is called Come to the Garden, which is the title of a book, but is also a poem, and it's not a book-length poem, and therefore I will ask you to read it if you could.
Well, Come to the Garden actually is a prayer and God's answer.
Okay.
I was in Yugoslavia on a pilgrimage, and I prayed to write a poem about peace. It was right before war came to the Balkans. Mm. And when I came home, I sat down to write, and to my surprise, it came out in the form of a poem. And I will read it. Come to the garden. Lord, I feel fragmented like a broken pot of clay. I've lost my focus. I've lost my way. I've poured myself out. I'm drained. I'm dry. I sense a discontent I can't identify. I feel rootless, like rolling tumbleweed, moving, 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 dizzy from the speed. I feel like quitting. I feel self-doubt. I'm tired, Lord. I'm worn out. How can I integrate my scattered thoughts, my dreams? How can I find balance, freedom from extremes? How can I slow down? How can I release? There are so many pressures. How can I find peace? Quiet, quiet, quiet. My child, be still. Listen to your feelings. Discipline your will. Come to the garden, the secret place we share. My essence is in the garden. Come to me in prayer. Transcend worldly cares. Seek the kingdom first. Peace lies within. It is for me you thirst. Accept your limitations. Embrace humility. Here lies the path to wisdom and to maturity. Come to the garden, the soul's sweet bouquet. The flowers of tomorrow are in the seeds of today. Together we will weed. Together we will sow. Together we will water. Together you will grow.
Well, that's lovely, and I can tell that it is a prayer. I know that it was actually read at the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington, D.C. back in 2003. I think, Senator Nelson's wife read it?
Yes, Senator Bill Nelson's wife, Grace, read it at the prayer breakfast. I happened to be attending the prayer breakfast that year, and I didn't know Grace was going to read it.
Is that right?
It was a complete surprise, and then she introduced me, and it was just a beautiful experience. The whole prayer breakfast was a beautiful experience. Condoleezza Rice was the keynote.
Gosh, that was an experience, especially being surprised by such a thing.
Yes. Well, Grace has always, she's been a fan of my poetry for years, and I've autographed books for President Clinton, and I have a letter from George and Laura Bush thanking me for Come to the Garden and the Path Less Taken, and well, I haven't sent her for President Obama, but I will.
Well, Joanna, thank you for reading Come to the Garden. I did notice also that it's on YouTube, and so anybody who wants to go to YouTube and just type in, search Come to the Garden or Joanna O'Keefe, and that's O with an apostrophe, Keefe, and then Garden, I suppose that search term would pop it up, and you can not only hear but see and hear Joanna reading that lovely poem. So, how did you get started? This is a classic interview question, isn't it?
I think so.
How did you get started writing poetry? Did it sort of, you know, did you start as a child or in college, or how did that happen?
A few years ago, I had a flashback. I was watching the news, and they had those who died in Iraq that week, and I turned off the TV. I said, I can't watch this. It's too sad. And then that small voice said, at least you can look at their faces, at least you can read their names, at least you can be witness to their life. And I had a flashback to when I was 4 years old and I was in a church with my parents. And it was at the funeral for my father's cousin who was killed on Guadalcanal. Now, this is very in my mind now, having just watched Pacific on Friday night, the new miniseries by Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. And as I was standing in that church, a flag-draped coffin came by where I was standing, and a beautiful woman flung herself on the coffin, sobbing uncontrollably. And it was her fiancé who was killed on Guadalcanal. And after that, I sat down and I wrote a poem, A Call to Arms, and I brought the lovers back together. And it was very healing for me to write this poem, and I won first place from the National League of American Pen Women, their state conference. But the interesting thing was, you asked me when I started to write, I also recalled words that I wasn't old enough to write, but in my mind, it came back to me, the women at home are crying, the men over there are dying, husbands, fathers, sons, across the seas on foreign land, these brave men make their stand. The women at home are crying. The men over there are dying. Mm. And I've been carrying that pain for most of my life. And when I wrote the poem, A Call to Arms, and brought the lovers back together the night before he was to leave for war, it was healing for me, and I was able to let it go.
So it sounds like you were very much a grown woman when you wrote your first poem. You weren't a teenager or something, right?
I was four.
Oh, okay.
But I wasn't all able to write, but it came to me because I was absorbing. Poets, I think, they're intense observers. They have intense ability to access their emotions and sensitivity. And I didn't understand that aspect of myself as a child, but I know how much that event impacted me. And then the flashback of seeing it, you know, those who have died in Iraq brought me back to that moment in my own life. And I think that's why poetry is not only healing for the poet who writes the poem, but for those who read it. As Robert Frost said, no tears in the writer, no tears in the reader, no surprise for the writer, no surprise for the reader.
I think it, as you said, takes somebody who is very much in touch with their emotions to write poetry. Unless you just write very heady poetry that's strictly intellectual and everything rhymes perfectly and it's idea content. But for the most part, there is a lot of emotional content in it. So what's the interplay between, I mean, does it take somebody who's unusually sensitive and emotional to write poetry, do you think? Or can any person kind of use it as a catalyst to bring that out in themselves?
I think anybody can write poetry. I think everybody is a poet. I spoke to a gathering of third graders in Omaha, and I asked how many read poetry. All their hands went up. How many like poetry? Most of their hands went up.
Oh, really?
But when I said, how many of you are poets? Only a couple raised their hands. I said, that's not true. We are all poets. In the words of William Butler Yeats, poetry is the true voice of feeling.
You're a well-known and accomplished and published poet, Joanna. Does it come easily to you, or is it a struggle? I mean, I know with some of the authors that I've talked with, and of course we've all read about authors writing, and sometimes it's just banging your head against a wall for a long time before it starts going. Is it like that with you, or how does it work?
Well, Come to the Garden came to me easily. That was a totally inspired poem. I almost just wrote it. But for the most part, it's the old saying, 90% perspiration and 10% inspiration. I do. I struggle with writing. And when I'm writing, I don't care if I eat. I can't sleep. The muse wakes me up. I try to put it down, and it's rather exhausting. That's my process. Mary Oliver, one of my favorite contemporary poets, said there are three types of poems: spirit poems, which are short, soul poems, which are long, and mind poems, which are very long. Now, my book, Morning's Light, I'd say are more poems from the spirit. I was living in Santa Fe, New Mexico, when I wrote that book, and I wrote it over a period of years. And Embraced, I wrote within a year, and those are more from the soul. And, well, Hiawatha, poems like that would be more from the mind. But one reason I published Morning's Light, my mother is, she's 96, but when she was 92, she said, "Honey, will you please get those poems out of the drawer? I can't wait forever." And that put a sense of urgency, because I'm always in that wandering time, that dreamy time. That's the time I prefer to be in. So it was a catalyst for my having a deadline. And then I finished that, and she said, "Now, honey, I want you to do your love poems. People will cry."
She's cracking the whip like an
editor. She's cracking the whip, and she's 96, and I hope that she keeps doing that. And my husband, who's been on this journey of poetry with me for many, many years, and he's edited every poem, he jokingly says, "Well, maybe your other poems will make you famous, but Embraced is going to make me famous." It's all love poems.
Oh, yeah. That's assuming they're all about him, of course.
Well, sometimes he'd read it and he'd say, "This one's not about me." But the thing is,
this guy's 6'8" and I'm not.
But you take a feeling and you take another memory, like the poem Destiny, which I may share, and living in Santa Fe and going to the Santa Fe Opera. And you take feelings and memories, and some of them are stories just as they happened, and some are collages.
So once you start writing well and it's going, does it really flow, or is it continually hard work and mental work? Or does it, I guess what I'm getting at is, I think some forms of art are, you know, whether you're a lead guitarist in a great band or a painter or a novelist or a poet, I think a lot of art is you kind of hit a groove and there's something in the air that starts to go through you. Composers have this happen. You know, I mean, Mozart basically said, you know, "Look, I translate what's coming through my head and coming into my hand, and it's not really like I'm not even writing it. It's just coming through, you know." Does it feel like that sometimes?
Sometimes, like Longfellow said, it comes from the misty realm of the unknown. Mm. And I was visiting Sundance, and Robert Redford had a plaque on the wall, a part of all art is to make silence speak. Mm. I think that's the thing, to get the silence to speak. Ultimately, the poem is going to say what the poem wants to say. Many times I'll sit down and I'll think I'm writing about something, and it totally becomes what the poem wants to say. Mm. And there is a flow. You do enter the flow.
I've known people, a couple of artists, painters, for example, who, if they couldn't paint for even a day, would get really antsy, really jumpy and nervous, almost like an addict who couldn't have access to their drug. Do you feel that way if you can't write a poem for a week or two, or are you less addicted?
I'm less addicted. In fact, I run away from it because it's so exhausting. When I write, I give myself all. I give it all to the writing. It consumes me. And so I do need space and time out and time to hike the mountains and to restore. Now, I know one of my favorite books is Anne-Mara Lindbergh's Gift from the Sea. And in that book, she said, "An artist needs to be alone to paint, a composer to write, a musician to compose, a writer to think out their thoughts, and a saint to pray." And that's how it is with me. I need a great deal of alone time to think out my thoughts. Not writing. I could actually write on a subway once I'm engaged.
Yeah.
But until that comes to me, I need a lot of time. And that's why I love monasteries. Mm. I was on a 10-day silent retreat at a Benedictine monastery in Snowmass, Colorado, that really opened up a lot of it comes from the unconscious. And it helped me to open up that unconscious and being able to just sit in silence.
So I gather you don't have like a daily regular schedule where you write between, you know, 10 and 2 or something like a lot of writers do. But as a poet, you're more subject to the muse and the spirit, I guess.
I am. I envy people who have schedules. I just don't seem to be able to schedule a schedule. It goes, no matter how I try, it goes against the way I'm wired. I have to be spontaneous.
We're talking with poet Joanna O'Keefe and how she's wired and how she works. And we've heard already one of her poems, a really well-known one that was published called Come to the Garden. Joanna, if you wouldn't mind, why don't we read a couple of poems from your recently published book of love poems called Embraced. I've read them just in the last few days. There are about 100 poems in the book. It's a slim volume, as they say, but about 100 poems and very lovely, easy to read. It's not, you know, dense poetry. It's very flows like water, right? So how about the poem Destiny?
Destiny. We met by chance one chill autumn night while waiting for the doors of the opera to open. I was dressed in long black velvet, you in faded denim. Without saying a word, you moved closer, I think to shield me from the cold. Gently, I placed a gloved hand upon your arm, shyly looking up into your intense but friendly eyes. Months have passed, seasons have changed, and our kisses have softened. Still, I am drawn like a moth to the flame, to you, my Renaissance man, who knows the pathway of the stars in the heavens, the Rubaiyat by heart. I know only this. I would rather die in your arms than live long and lonely in the windowless room of regret.
Well, would you mind reading another one? How about A Woman's Lament, also from the book Embraced?
I have a little story to tell before I read A Woman's Lament.
Sure.
I thought women would like Embraced because the poems are so romantic and sensitive, but I'm really delighted to find out how much men are enjoying this book of love poems. Now, I was doing a book signing, and this man came up to me. He had read my book, and he purchased my book, but he said, tell me, who was the mountain man? Who was the guy in the red truck? And then he said, my favorite poem was A Love Scene in Winter, which is a lovely romantic poem that takes place before an open fire. But he said, I think my wife's favorite poem will be A Woman's Lament.
Good.
Sometimes we're so close, his blood runs in my veins. Then like a slam door, he shuts me out, leaving me gasping in need of a transfusion.
That's a nice short one, but intense. So what do you do besides write? I know you write poetry, but then there's publishing and then there's readings. Do you do readings of different kinds?
I do readings. I do speaking engagements. Right now, now that I'm not writing, I'm more involved in, if you will, the marketing aspect. And actually, my first two books, Come to the Garden and The Path Less Taken, are out of print now, and I'm putting it on the air. I would love a publisher. They originally went into foreign languages. I have stacks of letters, and I know how much these poems really minister. And I don't want to have to do those.
So how about the publishing process? Is that pretty complicated?
Well, As I said, I published Morning's Light and Embraced with Blue Note Books in Cocoa Beach. And Paul Maluccio is wonderful to work with. He really is. And my books are available on Amazon and through the publisher and through my website, joannaoqueefe.com. No apostrophe.
So joannaoqueefe.com, all one word. Well, tell us about some of your experiences related to being a poet. But you mentioned that you were in Yugoslavia just before the Balkans War, and that prompted Come to the Garden. But what experiences have you had in conjunction with either before or after or during writing poetry or readings of your poetry or I don't know, book signings? I mean, you know, have there been any really memorable things that have come into your life as a result of writing poetry?
Actually, many events have come into my life. One of the most thrilling is my poem Courage, which is in Morning's Light, was incorporated into the emblem of one of our newest warships, the USS Mesa Verde. The CEO of the company, who was doing this for the commissioning of the ship, was visiting his mother, and he saw my poem, Courage, on the wall. And he said, oh, how could I get in touch with that poet? I need this. I want this for the commissioning of the USS Mesa Verde. Because the emblem is courage, teamwork, and tradition. So they used my poem, Courage, and a quote from Andrew Carnegie for teamwork and President George Washington for tradition, and did a beautiful parchment design. I can share courage if there's time. It's very short.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I set sail at sunrise, leaving the safe harbor for the open sea. Face to the wind, I look beyond fear to the horizon where my dream dances in thin light. Hand to the helm, I trim the sails and never look back.
Yeah, that's good. I can see that would definitely be a nautical maritime poem. And even in the hearts of sailors, there's room for poetry.
Well, there, and I loved going to Westminster Abbey and visiting the Poets' Corner. And one of the thrilling things I did with poetry when I lived in Santa Fe, New Mexico, I have a friend who is Bette Ridgway, a contemporary artist, and she would paint the essence of my poetry. She had a gallery on Canyon Road, and she paints large, and they were thrilling events to see my poetry next to her gorgeous paintings.
Wow, I bet. Well, what's kind of briefly, what's the publishing process like for a poet? It's hard enough for novelists to get published. Is there, you know, apart from just self-publishing, which I think, you know, a lot of people do to some extent or other, but as far as getting a mainstream commercial publisher to publish, is that extremely difficult, almost impossible?
It wasn't for me. It came really, I happened to just pick up the phone one day and call C.R. Gibson and say, I wrote this poem. Would you like to hear it? And the editor said, yes. And I read it to her, and she said, send it to me. And first they were going to do a greeting card. And I had a dream that it was going to be published as a book, and there'd be original art with each verse. And I called my editor, Julie Mitchell, and I told her about my dream. And C.R. Gibson did an absolutely gorgeous book. It went into foreign languages. And then they were purchased by Thomas Nelson, and they dropped their inspirational gift book line. And that's why I don't have those books now. And then I was with Regina Press, and they too are not publishing those inspirational books. So I really need a good inspirational publisher who publishes gift books. And I have another book I wrote, a poem all ready to go called Too Busy to Pray, and it's really timely in our culture today, Too Busy to Pray. So I have a trilogy waiting to go.
Okay, there's a little marketing and self-advertisement.
Yep. Am I getting there?
By Joanna O'Keefe. Anybody out there in the Orlando market or in Palm Beach County who's a publisher, joannaokeefe.com. So April is Poetry Month, and I have a question for you that's kind of tough as a poet. Is there a future for poetry in this increasingly non-literate age of, you know, of short attention spans and Twitter 144 character messages about virtually nothing?
Well, I think absolutely. I read in the Atlantic Monthly some time ago, but it's still pertinent. Poetry, the stepchild of literature, is experiencing a renaissance. And some time ago in the Oprah magazine, there was an article by Amy Bloom, Why Poetry Can Save Your Life. She goes on to say it leaves you feeling less alone and more understood, and it hands you back a piece of your soul. And when you said we are so busy today, poetry is short. Roger Houston has, I think, 5 books in the 10 poem series. They are incredible books. He has 10 poets, and then he gives a little essay after each poem. No, poetry, I think, is on the rise. And the American Academy of Poetry is doing an awful lot to promote it. National Poetry Month, and April 29th is National Poem in Your Pocket Day. I gave a poem last year to someone on Poem in Your Pocket Day, and as a result, I spoke at the YMWCA prayer breakfast. I predict it'll be like Valentine's Day, that popular. Maybe better, maybe more.
Okay, that's a positive, upbeat forecast.
And I believe it.
And I hope you're right. You know, I mentioned Twitter kiddingly as being something that would be an indication of our kind of instant gratification and short attention span culture, but there is actually Twitter haiku, and haiku, as many people in our listening audience might know, is a form of Japanese poetry that's extremely short. I mean, maybe just a few words. I don't know the format exactly, but, you know, it's no more than 5 or 6 words. And H-A-I-K-U. And so there is a Twitter haiku site you can go to.
Oh, really?
That I think is actually spelled T-W-I-H-A-I-K-U, Shui Haiku or something. Anyway, look it up. And you can actually do these little short poems in Twitter, you know, and it fits within that extremely small format. So it's kind of interesting. Well, we are talking with poet Joanna O'Keefe about her poetry and her life, and she's been reading some of her poems to us. What do you think is, you know, the sources of poetic impulse in different people? And gosh, we just have a couple minutes to go, but, and that's an odd question that maybe doesn't have a short answer, but in the past, many famous poets have been people who really were emotionally unstable or very depressed or manic depressive or who killed themselves in some cases. And so I think it's associated with like a frame of mind that's extremely sensitive and extremely aware, and that is not necessarily something that helps you get through the battering of dealing with life and people for year after year after year. Do you think it's related to the potential for emotional instability? Is it close to that?
I believe so. Look how many poets have taken their own life or were victims of drugs or alcohol.
Sure.
I was at a Chinese restaurant the other day having lunch with some friends, and when I got my fortune cookie said, "Despair is criminal." And I said, this isn't a good fortune cookie for a poet.
Yeah.
Despair and rapture are my two compelling emotions. So I think that's the way it is. I mean, it's been a long time since I've been depressed, but I know well the dark night of the soul. I know what it feels like. And for me, poetry is a way, it's a bridge. I was kind of but not able to get out of the inner world. I heard Patrick Smith years ago say a writer needs to write from a place they know well intimately. And for me, that place was the inner world. And poetry became my bridge. I was able to get those feelings from the inner world out. And now I can go in and out at will. And I don't have depression. I do quite often have to deal with anxiety. Mm. And I just think that's part of the sensitivity.
Sure. Well, I think it's one thing to be a poet and another thing to read poetry. So it could be that reading poetry can be a therapy for whether it's just the blues or being sad or being in a state of grief or real depression. You know, it's possible that you might try poetry along with Prozac instead of, you know, try, you know, reading poetry and see if it sort of lifts your spirits. I guess it depends on the poet. And we have been talking with Joanna O'Keefe, who is certainly a well-respected and well-known poet. Again, her website, joannaokeefe.com, JoannaOkeefe.com. And, well, Joanna, I want to thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety. It's been lovely to hear your poetry. In fact, you know, I wonder what, do we have time for one more quick one? How about Only 17?
Only 17. Okay, Court. Of course, that's the beginning of the book. I went way back in memory for this one.
Okay.
Like others before me who loved at first sight, I threw caution to the wind, gave my heart completely to the shy, handsome guy who covered my bare shoulders with his blue blazer. Though we were standing on a pier outside of the dance hall, I felt like a maiden rescued by her knight on his white charger, and I wondered what it would be like to kiss him. Later that night, when he did kiss me, all of heaven rejoiced, and the angels sighed.
Well, Joanna, thank you. That was lovely, and thanks for all of your readings and for being here with us on American Variety. Thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.